Hey everybody, before we start the show, I wanted to check in for a second and remind you all about Grand Con. Grand-con.com. Grand Con is a new comics and gaming convention in Grand Rapids, Michigan this year. It is September 20th through 22nd, 2013, so it's coming up in just a couple weeks at the Prince Conference Center. If you want to learn more about Grand Con, go to grand-con.com. Jason and I are going to be there the whole time. We'll have a booth where we can demo some of our game prototypes with you. We'd love to hang out and chat and give away some more free dice. So come see us at Grand Con. That's grand-con.com. They're going to have a ton of special guests that are much more exciting than us, though. So really, you should come for the whole event, not just for us. But we'd be happy to meet you there. Grandcon.com, grand-con.com. Check it out. We'll see you then. And now on with the show. And welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday. It's September 9th, 2013. I started that off so like good and professional, and then I totally blew it. Monday the 9th of September 2013. You're listening to episode 67. And I'm Rob and you're Jason.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes, let's get on with it already.
Shall we?
How's it going?
It's going pretty well.
Good. What's new?
Not a lot.
No?
No, I mean, no. Been doing some work for the co-op stuff.
Okay.
But, you know, not a whole lot.
Not a whole lot. Just kind of taking it easy.
Kind of chilling since Gen Con.
You know, man, just taking it easy, just relaxing, you know. Ain't no thing, man.
Well, Gen Con was just, you know, it was a lot going on. So
yeah.
I've been doing some follow-ups and stuff for that with some people and things, so.
Random. I thought I would show you something kind of funny.
Is this what you've been playing?
It's not what I haven't played it yet. It's a game. It's called You've Been Sentenced.
Yeah, I've seen that before.
Have you ever played it?
No.
No. You sound terribly excited about it as you yawn. It was a birthday gift from my sister-in-law. My birthday was in June. My sister-in-law was a little slow in sending it, but she knows that I like games, and so she likes to pick things and send them to me. And last time she did this, she bought me Name 5. Remember when we talked about that?
Yeah, that was really hard.
And this one, I opened the box, but I haven't looked at any of the cards. The idea is that you have to put together different cards to make a sentence, I guess. And it comes with a sand timer.
Okay.
We love sand timers. And I thought it might be interesting to kind of open a package of these cards and read off some of these words. What do you think?
Sure.
Yeah. While I'm doing this, what have you been playing?
Mostly, my wife and I have just been playing Le Phantom de l'Opera. We play that a lot.
I think we can just safely call it Phantom of the Opera.
I feel like I should call it the real thing.
Yeah,
that's how Bruno pronounced it. He was like, Le Phantom de l'Opera.
He pronounces it right.
Yeah.
With a French accent.
So, Phantom of the Opera.
Yeah.
Phantom, if you will. We've been playing that a lot still. So,
okay.
Ever since Gen Con, that's been our go-to. Like I said before, my copy of Jungle Ascent showed up. So I really want to try that again soon. I know I like it because we demoed it and it was great. But. Yeah.
Okay. So the idea of this game is that the players put together a sentence with some cards.
Okay.
So let's say I've got here. All right. These are all adjectives and verbs. I need some nouns. I need some nouns, Jason. Give me some nouns.
This game is really exciting.
I need some nouns. There's no nouns. They're all verbs.
Make it hard to make sentences.
I don't know. This is a failed segment of the show.
So, moving on then.
Moving on then.
So, Rob got a game. He's going to learn how to play it.
Bagging, poisoning, tiny, spill, or slide. There you go. There's words.
Slide.
Slide.
Slide could be a noun.
Slide bagging.
Slide poisoning.
Poison slide bagging.
Wow. That was great.
Poison slide bagging. Yep. The tiniest poison slide bagging.
You know what?
What?
This is a failure.
It is. Your part. All right. Sorry about that. It was worth a try, though.
It was worth a try. It worked really well with Name 5.
Poison bagging.
And with Cards Against Humanity, we did that, too.
Uh-huh.
This, not so fun.
Poison bagging.
The game might be fun, but yeah. Since you don't actually know how to play it, and you're just reading these cards with right. words on them.
I was hoping I would be spontaneous, but instead I failed. Anyway.
It happens.
So you've been playing Phantom of the Opera. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's still holding up for you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
It gets better every time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I feel like we've probably played it six, maybe seven times now since Gen Con. And I feel like I'm starting to understand some of the strategies. Well, Christine and I both are starting to understand the strategies a little better.
And the strategy is, okay, so you can either be the investigator or the phantom.
Right.
If you're the...
Yeah, I guess we haven't really talked about how the games work.
So basically, one person plays the investigator, the other person plays the phantom.
Right.
And then there's a bunch of suspects on the board. And the idea is every round, the investigator is attempting to eliminate suspects by... There are rules that tell you when the phantom will appear. If he's by himself in a room or if he's in the dark.
Right.
Those are the two times. So you have to move people around on the board to try and make it so that the phantom is not revealed. Or, you know, not discovered by the investigator. And every time he can eliminate someone, you flip them over, and for the rest of the game, they're, like, grayed out. And they still count as a token on the board,
right.
but he knows they're not the right. phantom. And he can't guess who the phantom is.
Right.
He has to be able to prove it.
Right. So the investigator is always trying to set it up so that some people on the board are alone and some people are together, so he can always... know that if the phantom appears, it's not those guys, but if the phantom doesn't appear, it's not those, you know. See, he's always trying to have a variety of arrangements on the board, whereas the phantom is always trying to get either everybody all together or everybody all separated out.
Right.
So the investigator can't learn anything about those people.
The investigator, here's how you play the investigator. 50-50. Every time.
Every time.
You just want to try and split right. it. So half would be the phantom if it at the end of the round, and half win it.
Right.
If you keep doing that, you will win the game every single time.
Yeah. But it's not that easy.
It's not that easy, but there's the easy strategy on that.
Right.
With the phantom, and here's something too that I thought was interesting. So Rob and I played, and I beat you.
Yeah.
And I think the reason I beat you is because you let your opinion on who the phantom was
affect me as the investigator.
Affect you as the investigator, and because you actually told me, I think it's this person. Mm-hmm. And as soon as you said that, I was like, well, now Rob, I'm going to try and make you lose. So I would just bait you, and you would try and expose that person because it was a very tight game because we were very equally matched with it. And sure enough, at the end, you made a move because you thought it was the person, and then he wasn't.
I made the wrong move.
Yep.
Yep. It's true.
So I thought that was interesting. I've been trying as the investigator to completely not even try and figure it out, to just go with the evidence. You know?
Hunches don't help you in this game.
No.
Hunches are your enemy as the investigator.
I mean, if your hunch was right, it could help you, but it's more likely not to help you because it's really hard to know who the person is.
Mm-hmm.
My wife and I found that with the strategy, and is the phantom, like... I don't mind moving the phantom person all the time because, again, it doesn't matter what you believe. It only matters what you can prove.
Yeah.
And that's something really cool about the game.
Yeah.
Because you can know who it is for sure, but as long as I can make it so you can't expose them, I'm going to win every time.
Yeah. The last game that we played, Christine and I, she was the investigator and I was the phantom. And I was ready to go, and I was like, yeah, man, I'm going to get this. First turn, she flipped over four of the eight. Like, four of the eight, guaranteed, done, knew that they were not the phantom.
That's a good first turn for the investigator. That's a perfect first turn.
Yeah, right. It was just devastating for me. And I was like, oh, crap, this is the worst. Next turn, she flipped over two more. Oh. So there were only two guys left, and I was like, oh, man, I'm going to lose this so bad. This is definitely the worst game I've ever played. But you know what? I won. Because for like the next six turns until the game ended, I was able to defend.
That's awesome.
I was able to resist. And I got the Phantom to manifest most of the time.
Right. So that's another thing.
Yeah.
This score tracker's moving, which basically this Duchess is running away because she's afraid of the Phantom. And if she runs away, you win the game. If she gets
to the exit.
Yeah. And... if the Phantom manifests, she moves one extra square. She moves one square for every suspect there is. So, the first couple of turns are really important. If you can try and hold to them only revealing one person, you'll make some huge jumps. Because there's only, like, maybe 25 spaces on the board.
Something like that.
And
there's
slots for handicapping where you can actually...
You know, and we even handicapped at that time for the investigator.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a long fight, a long time for me to stay secret.
And, you know, part of it is luck with the cards because you can only move half the people at any given time.
Yeah.
So if one person goes first one turn, one person goes first the next turn. So if you are the wrong person on the wrong turn, when the person that needs to be moved comes up, you might not be able to do anything. Right. You know, I think one of the best characters to be the Phantom is the Pink Lady because she can move through the secret passages. Also, they all have really good powers.
They all have great powers.
Because there's the one lady who draws everyone in, and that's pretty awesome. She moves in her room, pulls everyone in around her, and then is like, oh, guess who the Phantom is? You can't tell because we're all in the room together. Right. So
yeah, it's a super, super smart game. If anybody out there who's interested in really tight two-player strategy games, it's fantastic.
And it doesn't take any time to learn at all.
No, super easy to learn. And it's not really, I mean, there is some randomness in it based on which characters are available in each turn, but you are playing against your opponent. You're not playing.
Yeah.
You're not subject to the whims of the game and to a random die roll. There's none of that. There's zero of that. You are in a battle of wits with the other person, and it's extremely satisfying.
Yeah.
Really, really, really excellent. I just can't speak highly enough about the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So.
All right. So it's time. Let's move on. You want to say something else?
Well, I just wanted to say that we picked up Morels, and Christina and I played some more of that.
We've been playing that.
Morels is great, too. Another really good two-player strategy experience. It's a card game, so there's some more randomness involved. But it's a game of set collection, and you're trying to collect like types of mushrooms and fungi, and you're trying to cook them in your pan. And when you cook them, you make a set. It's cool. It's pretty sneaky. The strategy of it sneaks up on you really well. I don't really need to go into a whole lot of detail right now explaining exactly how it works. That'll be for another time, I think, because we spent some time there on Phantom. But Morels is really, really great. If you like two-player card games, it's a tight experience. It plays really well. It plays pretty fast, too. You can play a game in 20 minutes. So really highly recommended. Really like that game a lot. I'm not crazy about mushrooms. In fact, I don't like mushrooms. And which is probably why it took me this long to even try the game. It's Christine too. She doesn't like mushrooms, you know? It's weird. It's the same reason why I haven't played wasabi, because I don't care about sushi.
And I love sushi, so I played wasabi, and then I found a really awesome game.
Yeah, yeah. And it's weird that way. And it's why I don't play zombie games, because I'm sick of zombies. But I'm sure there are some really good zombie games out there I'm missing. You know, but at any rate, Morels is great. If you're looking for two-player games, those two games were really the kind of the two biggest bonuses for us from Gen Con this year. We're getting Morels and Phantom of the Opera. Great two-player games. Loved them to death. Love them to death. Yeah. So, anyway. Let's move on to the feature of the week.
Feature of the week, if you didn't hear last time.
Yeah.
We've redefined the mechanic of the week as the feature of the week, because as you know, many times we discuss things that were very loosely called mechanics, so we just kind of wanted to redefine it, and also give us a little more freedom to talk about some different things.
Yeah.
As we said on the last episode, this feature of the week, we're going to talk about the Water Balloon Washout Kickstarter more in detail than we have previously. Because we felt like we owed that to you guys, and because we said we would. So right.
Sorry it took us so long to get to it.
Yeah.
Gen Con just cropped up,
you know,
right there.
I had it set specifically to end just before Gen Con, so that Gen Con didn't get in the way. I was very nervous about that. You know, other games have shown that doesn't necessarily matter. Great Harlan Hauling had theirs run during Gen Con. Havoc and Hijinx did. Tessen, you know, and they haven't had any issues with that. But I was a little nervous about it.
Yeah.
Being my first one, I just wanted to make sure it was done before Gen Con. And I'm glad I did, because then I didn't have to think about it while I was at Gen Con. So right. I got a nice break after, like, 30 days of Water Balloon Washout!
Yeah.
Okay. So, again,
to recap, you were successful, but kind of just barely.
Yep. $7,259.
Of your $7,000 goal.
Yes.
Okay.
And we made it in the last 3 hours.
Last 3 hours is when you hit.
Okay. That was a very tense time. It was myself and several friends who were texting with or tweeting to me and stuff, and texting with me, were watching it. And they were friends that had already backed it. So they weren't backing it anymore. They were just watching it with me, you know, and it was cool. Once we got within about $500 a couple days before, I was done worrying. I was like, hey, we got this. I'm like, I know we got this. I know what the last 2 to 3 days are like. I know that a lot of people at the 48-hour mark do reminders. That's when those ding in, mm-hmm. and I thought, we're going to be fine. And sure enough, we were. We had, you know, room to spare. So let's talk about this, though.
Yeah, all right.
So, okay. So start out, it was a game we wanted $7,000 for. We had $15 a copy. That worked out to be, oh, gosh, the math slipped my head. I've said it so many times and then just now I just lost it. So I'm doing a little quick division here. 7,000 divided by 15 equals 467 backers we needed if everyone gave $15.
That's a lot.
It's a lot. And I was banking on the fact that we'd sell people multiple copies because that was one of the things we pushed in the game was you can play 8, 12, 16 players. You just need more copies. So based on some feedback from some people, we discounted the copies by a buck each level. So the first copy would cost you 15, the second 14, third 13, down to 12, and then 12 stayed because if it went any lower than that, we were going to start losing money with shipping. So
yeah,
So that was the plan. To start out, I did not send out that many review copies. I sent out a few to some friends. Reason behind that. I was very intimidated by sending out the review copies, not because I didn't think the game was worthy of reviewing. On the contrary, I'm very proud of that game, and I feel like it would have gotten very good reviews from the people I think we could have sent it to. I wanted to send one to Father Geek. I like to think he probably would have liked it, and I probably will send him a real copy when the game is published so that hopefully he can look at it then. The problem was I didn't have a prototype that I was happy with sending out to reviewers.
Yeah.
Because there are reviewers I read where they'll judge based on what it looks like, you know, and that was concerning to me. So I only hit up people that I knew who would review it and not worry about what it looked like and not want to put a ton of pictures in because I didn't want too many pictures of the prototype because the prototype really wasn't what I wanted to feature.
Sure, yeah.
Because I know that the final game is going to look 1,000 times nicer than the prototype. Okay. So that was mistake number one, we'll say. First day of the Kickstarter went very well. Mm-hmm. I made almost $600. I mean, I kind of had dreams of like a $2,000 first day, but I didn't actually think that was going to happen.
Okay.
So $600 first day, or just short of that, I was very happy. Second day went well too, a few hundred dollars. From there, it slowed up, obviously.
Yeah.
We got down to about 2 backers a day, which was rough. You know, mm-hmm. you see that number and you're going up $60 a day. Because most, like I said, most people, if you look at my ratio on KickTrack, most people did not just buy one copy.
Hmm.
And that's what saved us, right? I mean, mm-hmm. most people bought 2 copies or more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we've got that going. In addition to that, we started out with a $250 level called I'm in the Game. And at that level, we would have the artist take a picture of your kid, who was between about 5 and 12, and draw them, all fancy-like, and they would be in the actual game. We started at $250 because we didn't know where to start it at. $250 was really nice math with having 16 slots available.
Mm-hmm.
I felt really good about that. And actually, I think we had 14 slots available. But anyways, I felt really good about that. Knowing that we may not sell any, but I feel good about this number.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't sell any of those right away.
Yeah.
And so that was kind of the first, you know, I talked to you quite a bit about that.
Yeah, $250, that's a lot.
It is a lot.
Yeah.
But I was, you know, I've been told by other people, you always want to have a high number on your Kickstarter because someone might claim it. You know, and we had backers actually eventually who backed at a higher level than that.
Mm-hmm.
But they weren't people that wanted a kid in the game.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I was glad that they didn't claim that because a week or two in, we said, okay, we gotta drop this, you know.
Yeah.
And I had had some actually people come to me, friends and other people who said, I would really love to put this person in the game, but I just can't afford $250. And I was like, you know what? What makes sense? So I actually talked to several different people,
mm-hmm.
And kind of came up with $75 makes sense because it more than covered the cost of the artwork
for that
card. And I thought, you know, I mean, if they're just paying for the artwork and the prints, and even if they're getting the copy of the game for free at that point, that's $75. I'm not going to turn that down. So that's how $75 kind of came up.
Okay.
And we sold a lot of those, actually.
Yeah, making that change was really good for you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That made, you know, that really helped. Several people upped their backing, and we got fresh people. And so that was another thing that really helped that campaign
Finish
strong. Mm-hmm. Or finish on the right side of the finish line.
Finish, period.
Yeah. Not just be finished at the end.
Right.
Okay. So those are some decisions we made. One of the biggest things we had trouble with was getting traffic to the site.
Yeah.
So I want to say a little, because there's kind of like the Kickstarter curse of the family game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows about
it's
this.
A struggle.
I won't say names, but I mean, there are designers out there who are established designers who've tried to put family games out there and just it hasn't made it.
Right.
Because a lot of gamers see family games and say, that's not my game. I'm not interested in that game.
Right.
And we knew that going in. So I don't want anybody to think that I was like, why aren't the gamers backing my games? In fact, more gamers backed my game than I expected. What I was counting on was a lot of friends and family and people like that who are kind of into games.
Yeah.
And they are the target audience for this game.
Right.
That said, you know, as we've discussed before, this is a game that will please gamers.
Yeah. It is a fun game.
They're just not
game.
Willing to take a chance on it always.
Right.
And like I said, more of them were willing to take a chance than I expected.
Mm-hmm.
And that's awesome.
That's
I'm
fantastic.
Super excited about that.
Yeah.
Because I think they'll be pleased when they get it.
Mm-hmm. I think so too.
So one of the big issues we had was a lot of people on the other side, not friends and family. I mean, they took care of me, and we'll get to that later. But a lot of the non-gamers that I expected, who I know that I got their attention, just didn't want to go to Kickstarter and back it.
Hmm.
So that is
a challenge, because your theme applies to families, and it applied to that part of that audience, though, that was not necessarily tech savvy.
Exactly.
Yeah. And they would rather say, oh, sure, I'd love a copy of your game. Here's $15 cash.
Right.
But the idea of them going and putting their credit card into a website maybe scares them.
And, you know, one of the things I hyped up was, listen, you're going to have to sign up on Kickstarter.
Yeah.
But in the end, Amazon is going to take your money.
Yeah.
And you trust Amazon. Because even most people who are just slightly tech savvy, they trust Amazon. Because it's Amazon, right?
Right.
And I will not say this officially, but what you mentioned before, the idea of people just taking money, you know, we certainly did not offer that, but that doesn't mean that didn't happen. You know, I certainly, there were people who backed, who they kept increasing, and they kept asking for more copies. And I'm going to guess that they may have sold some copies to some people. Again, not through us.
Yeah.
They didn't tell me that they did that, because I made it clear to people ahead of time that I'm pretty sure that's not allowed. But if that happened, I'm certainly not going to begrudge those people, because, you know,
sure,
that's one of the reasons why we probably made it.
Sure.
So yeah, I don't know what the exact rules are other than Kickstarter.
I don't know. You're not supposed to put your own money into it.
Right.
Yeah.
Which certainly, yeah, that's a no-no. You cannot back it yourself. In fact, it was funny, because one day I was on Kickstarter on my phone trying to look at my stuff, and I hit the back button. Like,
oops.
Back this project, and immediately it's like, pop, you cannot back your own project.
Wow.
And I was like, oh no, don't turn my project off. It was an accident. It's kind of frustrating that button's even there.
Yeah, that's weird. Whatever. It's a standard page.
But still, it made me really nervous.
Yeah.
Just gray it out, Kickstarter. Okay. All right. What else can I talk about with this? So I was talking about friends and family. So, and I mentioned that, you know, we had several friends and family who not only did they back at higher levels, they got the word out.
Mm-hmm.
They really got the word out.
Yeah.
I mean, they were purposely going to people and getting the word out, you know, and that's, man,
it's great.
It's hard to, it's hard to know what effect that had for sure.
Yeah.
But when you see people backing you, who you don't know specifically.
Yeah.
And you also can see that, you know, they know other people, you know, say on Facebook, you know, that's how that's happening. I mean, we had over 400 shares, I think. You know, and I've seen success, like super successful projects that have had way less than that.
Yeah.
But people really started about halfway through the campaign to try and get the word out.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, with Facebook, a lot of it falls on deaf ears, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah. But those friends and family helped save that campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, we weren't able to get the word out for some reason to the non-gamers. We talked about the fact that I spent some money, $500 actually, to put an ad on BGG,
right?
Which I still stand by. I think was a good idea. I don't know that we made our money back with it. There's ways to track that kind of. Mm-hmm. I know that we had a lot of impressions, 500,000. 500,000 people saw it, or 500,000 times it was seen.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what your click-through rate was, though?
The click-through rate was less than 1%, but that still worked out to be, you know, hundreds of people clicking through.
Mm-hmm.
So that that was good, right?
Yeah.
In that, in some of them, I can see backed it. Others, I don't know if they did, but, you know, they could have clicked it, clicked remind, and then come back later and back, you know, I don't know.
So 500,000 views, if 1% would be 5,000.
Right.
So, you know, I mean.
So it may have been close to 1,000 then.
Yeah. Less than 1% would just be less than 5,000, which is still could be a good number.
Right. I mean, I know when I saw the click-through rate early on, I was like, that's, you know, I mean, hey, there was hundreds of people at that point. And I thought, I'll take that. I mean, yeah. Whether or not they all back it, you know.
If that your $500, if that translated into a dollar per person looking at your thing, and then let's see it. So what is $500 divided by $15?
What was that again?
$500 divided by 15. What is that?
500 divided by 15.
Yeah.
Our listeners probably think we're so dumb with math.
What's math?
$33.
So if you had 33 backers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was the math we worked on. Yeah. We needed 33 backers to make our money
back. It worth it.
And that was a risk. You know, my wife and I, we talked a lot about that. What are we willing to do? What are we willing to spend? You can't put money into your own campaign, but you can funnel money other places to try and get people's attention. So,
you can advertise.
Right. Because it's funny, because it's basically like putting money in your own campaign, right? I mean, that's kind of what it feels like, except for it's not a one-for-one.
Right.
But there's a chance, because it's a gamble, there's a chance that it's like a two-for-one, or there's a little chance it's a half-for-one.
Yeah. So it's tough to say for sure, 100%, that the money spent on the BGG ad was worth it.
Right.
It feels like it was a good choice.
Right.
But you can't say unequivocally that the data proves it.
Right. I would say this. Our traffic certainly increased when we did that.
Yeah.
And our biggest problem, at least we felt like, was we weren't getting enough traffic.
Traffic, yeah. Okay.
So traffic increased. I'm going to take that as a win. You're spending so much money when you're publishing a game. It's an extra $500, right?
Yeah.
I mean.
Right. And we should also say that I mean, listeners, you may have noticed that we're not going through a daily or weekly breakdown of total volume. You can go to the KickTrack site and you can see that kind of stuff. We're not going to waste your time with you know, day by day numbers or week by week breakdowns.
We're not the type of people that are going to be good with breaking those numbers down anyways. Right. So go to KickTrack, check it out. They have a really detailed thing.
Yeah, KickTrack is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can, if you look, you'll see days where it spiked and that's where I can see bigger people backed. Or, you know, like people who gave more money.
Right.
And or we had like a small cluster of people backing that day because, you know, a person got the word out to a group of people and that group of people was like, yeah, we're going to support this. And then they put it out there.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. You know, I mean, that's, you know, those are the days that really helped us, obviously, because we had some slow days.
Right.
But man, towards the end, it really does feel like magic.
Yeah.
When it's just like, boom, 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 you know.
Right.
You know, every day was a good day.
Yeah.
And that feels good because I'll tell you, week three for us was really slow.
Mm-hmm.
And I was warned ahead of time that week three would be slow. But, oh, man, when you're in it yourself and you're not funded, that's like one of the best things about funding before week three, which I wish we could have, is when week three happens, you're like, nah, I mean, we're already funded. You know, it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was like, nah, we got a ways to go.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. So if you're interested, if you're a numbers person, look at KickTrack.
Mm-hmm.
Look at the specifics. So we got 72.59 was our total.
Mm-hmm.
I looked a couple days ago on my Amazon account, and I want to say it was like $6,600 in there because that's Kickstarter took the money out.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Which was only, I did the math, and it was not 10%. So, because it's anywhere between 8 and 10%.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because credit cards are 3 to 5%, depending on the card and the type of transaction.
Right, okay.
Kickstarter is 5. So, You know, and 10% is a really fair number. I mean, even if it was 10, and I think if you're going to do your budget for a Kickstarter, you need to set it at 10, maybe even 11, just to account for, you know, because remember, some of the people aren't going to pay.
Yeah.
You know, that's something else I want to talk about. Some issues people have had. One, people have told me, you know, have said, watch out for cancellations. You're going to get tons of cancellations. And two, you're going to get a certain percentage of people that just aren't going to pay.
Yeah.
So
credit card's going to reject or right. something.
We had zero cancellations.
That's great.
So
it's lucky.
And in case I said something contrary on the other show, I just want to clear up. We had one cancellation, but it was a husband and wife who I don't know back to the same time. And then it appears one of them canceled and then the other one left theirs. So I'm guessing they both tried to back it and, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to count that as a cancellation. I'm going to say that didn't count. So, you know, cancellations, the idea are somebody goes out there and backs. And I mean, I've talked to people who've seen somebody go back like $several hundred.
Oh, wow.
And then towards the end, they'll just cancel.
Oh, that's rough.
You know, and they're just doing it to be mean. I mean,
really,
you know,
it's a shame.
So because they've said, you know, it's like accounts that you can tell they really haven't backed anything. And then boom, they backed a ton of money on yours. And oh, then they took it away.
Huh?
Like, it's just kind of mean.
That's a bummer.
We had zero. So we had zero cancellations. And every single piece of money came through. We had one reject, and then later that day it went through.
Oh, okay.
So it must have just been like a bad card number or something.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
that's
so
great.
We had not a ton of backers, but we had devoted backers. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had just over 100 backers total. Mm-hmm. My goal really during the campaign became, I really want to break 100. Even when I thought we might make it, I was like, I really want to break 100. And we did. So
that's good.
But that shows you that 467 was a long ways off. And one of the things I've noticed people have been doing on Kickstarter recently is the dollar campaigns.
Yeah.
Have you seen that where people will tweet and say, all right, we're doing a dollar campaign.
I've seen more of that. Yeah.
Who's willing to go out there and give a buck? And we had some people come out and just give a dollar.
Yeah.
And I was super thankful for that. We also had some people, I had a couple friends contact me and say, hey, we're going to buy 2 copies of the game. We're willing to give you the extra buck. Would it be cool if we just backed it on 2 different accounts? Like, I'll buy a copy and my wife will buy a copy. And I was like, that would be awesome because it's an extra backer.
Extra backer,
you know what I mean?
Right.
So that's great.
Those numbers are good.
And it gave me an extra dollar, which wasn't super concerned about, but that extra backer is always nice. And that was actually early on. So that was nice because, mm-hmm. you know, early on you want those raw numbers.
Yeah. Here's another question.
Yes.
Okay. You didn't have a whole lot of different backer levels.
Right.
You had 1 copy, 2 copy, 3 copy, 4 copy, and then you jumped up to you're in the game.
Yep.
Okay. Would you do that again, or would you have more backer levels? What do you think?
You know, I've looked at the stats before for people's backer levels, and meaning, because you can see it on any Kickstarter. You just look at the at the numbers that are on there.
Sure.
And the base game level pretty much is always the highest one.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what else you're offering. For ours, that was the highest, but then we did very well, in the 2, 3, and 4 copies.
Mm-hmm.
And the 4 copy one, if you look, we did really well in that. And that was because that was people ordering 6 to 8 copies sometimes, you know?
Sure. To give away as gifts or,
like, you know, or I knew somebody who had a youth group at a church and
they
bought several copies knowing that they could use them there because it's a family friendly game.
Sure.
And it scales to a large group of people. So, mm-hmm. I think that was okay. You know, so many people do like bells and whistles and stuff. And I think if you have an expensive game,
mm-hmm.
it's cool to offer something cheaper. You know, Viva Java Dice.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that was that expensive on Kickstarter, but it was pricier than, say, Water Balloon Washout. They had like a really low entry level where you could get their Angry Dice game. And it was just like the Dice Hate Me logo dice.
Yeah.
And they made a little game for it.
Okay.
So it was like getting backers, but not having to have them spend the full amount. Mm-hmm. So, like, I want to help you, and I don't just want to give you a dollar. Oh, I'll give you $5 or $10 for this. And then at the higher level, people were backing to get both. You know, so that was cool. Mm-hmm. One of the things I think is interesting, too, and Dice Hate Me does this a lot, where they'll have, like, they're using their Belle of the Ball Kickstarter that's on right now.
To reprint
Great Heartland and
Carnival.
Carnival, yep.
Yeah.
What a great idea.
That's a really smart idea.
So, yeah, so yeah. That's cool. I think that I would probably do the same. I think I might add 1 or 2 more levels mm-hmm. if I did another one.
Okay.
You know, there were some options we looked at with Water Balloon Washout, but none of them were functional. And a price range. We talked about having a big playmat.
Yeah.
It was kind of the yard.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you could just set that on the table. But to get the right size was going to be too costly.
Was it? Okay.
And then we had to pay for a bunch more art for that and more layout. And I wasn't going to be able to have that in time to show people, you know. And so let's talk about that. I put some stuff together on my own. I learned some Photoshop and I knew it wasn't going to be the final product. I didn't know if that was going to have a big impact or not. Some people commented that they wanted to see some different stuff, and I didn't have it because it's what I did. I don't think that that kept a ton of people away. I think that, so I don't know. One of the things that has been bothering me about Kickstarter, and it's something I didn't do, and it's something that even if I had been able to have more layouts that I wouldn't have done, which was have it all done, right? Yeah. Like have it all done ahead of time. Like I look at, Tessin, right?
Yeah.
Like, look at Tessin's, and it's the entire game. It's done.
Ready to go, yeah.
It's laying there, you know? And that's awesome that they can do that, but I couldn't have done that. Like, I couldn't have paid for all the art ahead of time. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that was, you know, that was too bad. I wish that I could have done that, but there's just no way that I could have paid for the layouts ahead of time or the, you know, all the artwork. And, you know, I had an artist, you know, and you had talked about helping with layout stuff. Mm-hmm. You guys would have certainly worked for no cash up front. But I also I don't feel so bad about that with you, but like with a, sure, with artist, a professional artist who, whose job is drawing, getting paid, even if he would do that, I feel like that's taking advantage of him, you know?
I would have been happy to do more artwork, but I had a whole lot of other stuff going on at the time, and I just didn't have the time to put together a real card layout for you in advance.
Plus, we didn't have the artwork to support it, you know?
Right.
I mean, you could have done a layout, and I think you would have done a nicer layout than I did, but you would have been so limited, because I think the main difference would have been there would have been a background, which would have been cool, but it wouldn't have been the final background, because that wasn't painted yet.
Would have just all been temporary placeholder kind of stuff.
And, you know, Kickstarter is really tough about that. Like, they would rather you have things that look final. Because they actually didn't approve my thing at first, because I didn't have a picture of the prototype. Mm-hmm. I just had the card layouts, like the digital versions, and they wouldn't let me do it. I had to put a picture of the prototype in. And I didn't want to, because the prototype was not professionally made. It was printed nicely.
Yeah.
And then I had to cut it out. And I cut it out as best I could, but it wasn't great.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's, I guess if I could give advice to someone, it would be have the artwork. Get the artwork done.
Yeah.
You know, it sucks. It really does.
It sucks, and it's a big capital investment on your side with no guarantee of a return. Or maybe at least have enough of the artwork done that you can you can give a good example of what the game is.
Right.
Yeah.
You know what? I mean, yeah. Like I said, so our alternatives would have been, if we would have had more time to work together, we could have done some fancier layouts.
Yeah.
But I don't think it would have made a huge impact, because we didn't have the artwork, you know, and
the character designs. And everything,
So, another thing, that's a great point. Another thing that hurt us, because we wanted to put the character designs in as part of the game, as part of the Kickstarter.
Right.
I only got two characters generated ahead of time, knowing that I might have to throw those away, because there's only 16 kids.
Yeah.
And so if we have 16 slots, I know that if those all sell out, we're gonna have to pitch those kids.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cool. But, you know, and I'm really happy with the art we had. I'm very happy with it. And several people said that they really liked it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Brendan is excellent.
Yeah, yeah. But not having everything, you know, was tough. And, you know, I think, I would find a way to pay for it ahead of time next time. That was certainly a lesson learned.
Okay.
Plus, that would have allowed me to have better review copies.
Yes, right.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So, lessons learned from this. Let's recap. Lessons learned. Better artwork up front, more artwork up front.
Well, not better, more.
More artwork up front, a better prototype up front.
Yes, okay. For sure.
For sure, okay.
Send out for review copies.
Review copies. Lower, make your upper backer level options lower from the start.
Or at least have some more mid-range ones.
More mid-range options.
And then shoot for the moon. Put one out there that's high. Okay. Go for it.
No reason not to.
But don't make sure put it one you depend on.
Right, okay. Don't shoehorn yourself into needing 400 backers.
Right.
Yeah. Don't put yourself in that position where you need that many in order to succeed.
And that's, you know, so that's another good point. We were initially going to set it at 5,000. And I actually said on the show, we're going to set it at 5,000. We ended up setting it at 7. So that was, I'll be honest with everybody, that was some personal issues. So I was at Origins getting ready for the Kickstarter, and I was meeting with some people about some other stuff. And I found out that I was getting laid off. So, you know, I had talked about how I think it's good to try and put some money aside so that you can help yourself with your Kickstarter. I mean, not like help your Kickstarter, meaning that if you fund, but you're going to need a little extra money to help pay for everything, you should try and have some money set aside.
Right.
Just because. It's good practice.
Yeah.
Because that way, if you just barely fund like we did, you know that, you know, you're going to be all right to make sure you make everything.
Yeah.
If there's unexpected expenses. So once we found out that I was losing my job that I've had for like 12 years, it was kind of an oh crap moment. Because, you know, that money that we knew we could throw into it,
now you might need for other stuff to survive. Say,
why didn't you just use that money to buy the artwork up front? Well, we could have, but then we would have had to set the bar higher, which I didn't want to do. So, and I'm glad I didn't, cause then it may have been 9,000 and we might not have made
it. Right.
So that's why we ended up switching to 7,000. I did find a job. Nobody worry about me. I've talked about having a new job.
He's fine.
But that was it was very bad timing with that. So we didn't really have an option to delay the Kickstarter at that point. And that's just not something we can talk about right now, but later I can talk about that and, why the timing worked out the way it did. That made it a little harder. I think 5,000 would have been awesome. I'm curious if at 5,000 we would have broke 7,000. I don't think we would.
I don't know, because you would have hit your goal earlier, and people like to back a winner.
That's true.
You know, so it's one of those what ifs that who knows what would have happened had that been, because you hit 5,000 early in week 4.
Yeah, or maybe even before that.
Even before that, okay.
Might have been slightly before that.
Okay. Yeah. Tough call.
Yeah,
it's hard to know.
You know, so it's just one of those things where lots of lesson learned. You know, it's funny because when I first did the Kickstarter, when I finished, I said, I will never do this again. I think in a year or two, I'd be dumb enough to try it again. With the lessons learned, you know, I feel like I could do it. I honestly think, though, I'd love to get a game or two under my belt with some other people.
Yeah.
to get my name out there a little more, you know. And one more note that we haven't mentioned yet, that I should have. There are a lot of people who listen to this show who backed. And some of you I knew ahead of time. I knew you were listeners because, you know, you were friends. So thank you. Others I didn't. And what I one thing I did, I sent a personal message to every backer and said, thank you for backing. That's very important to me. Turned out to not be that tough since there's only a little over 100 backers. Some people like 1,000 backers. That's a real tough job. But, I wanted to do that. I wanted to say, you know, thank you, Rob, for backing this game. I really appreciate, you know. Several people, I mean, literally several, when I said that to them, responded immediately and said, hey, thanks. I love your show. I'm really happy to be a part of this. You know, thanks for putting the show out.
That's great.
You know, and I'm sure not all the people that listen to the show did that, but some of them did. And that's awesome, man. You know,
it's super awesome
to know that people from the show wanted to support this. So thank you to all those people.
Yeah, thank you guys.
You know,
I mean, one of our goals here is to try and share with people one of our side goals is to hopefully try and build a community around this game design idea. And that means that to some degree we're succeeding at that. And that's really, really rewarding.
It is. Yeah. It is very rewarding. So thank you again to those people. All right. Yeah. So now, let's move on.
We're running long again.
Sorry.
That's okay.
But, you know, you guys deserved a good discussion on this. So, all right. So now, Rob is going to practice a pitch.
Yeah, it's my turn to pitch a game, and I haven't pitched one. Last time I pitched was Toilet Wars.
Toilet Wars!
Before we went to Gen Con. So, this is a game. Okay. I was lying in bed one night trying to go to sleep after Gen Con, and I was just sick as all heck. And I often will put on a movie when I'm going to sleep because I just need something to kind of distract my brain from itself. I have a really hard time about that. Once I lay down to go to sleep and my brain just starts going because I don't have any distractions, and then I'll never get to sleep. So I often put on a movie and I put on Pirates of the Caribbean 3 at World's End. And so I'm lying there and I make it like almost all the way through the whole movie. Whole thing, and I'm just starting to doze off, and it gets to that final scene where the Black Pearl and the Flying Dutchman are having there's that battle where they're in the big whirlpool in the ocean, and
right.
you know, it's a very exciting scene, and it's this weird thing. I mean, that movie had some problems, but that was a great scene, you know, with Captain Sparrow and Davy Jones sword fighting in the rigging, and I don't know, it's just a great scene, you know. It's really dynamic. It's huge. It's the kind of thing that only Hollywood can do, you know.
Right.
And I started thinking about mechanically how would those ships move in that maelstrom, you know, and you know, the wind, it's in the wind is always moving in a certain direction, and they're spinning around each other, and they're getting closer and closer and closer, and eventually the rigging gets all tangled up with each other because they're both angled over, and how would that work? And I started envisioning the center, or this vortex of water, you know, as a grid, and thinking about the movement of these ships through this grid. And so naturally, this took me to thinking about Formula D and how much I love that game, and thinking, gosh, how would these ships move on this kind of track? What would a circular track that's made up of this basically represents this vortex of water? What would that be like? So I started to come up with this game that I'm calling Maelstrom.
Yes.
Working title. Uh-huh. And it's a game where it's 2 to 4 players, 2, 3, or 4 players, and you are each the captain. Each of you is the captain of a pirate ship that has been caught in a maelstrom, and you are battling each other, because if you can be the last man standing, then you will have appeased the evil god of the ocean, and the maelstrom will end, and you will be able to sail away. So that's the basic idea of the game. All right. Each player has a ship that is sailing in a clockwise direction around a circular track. Okay. Uh-huh. And the track has multiple levels. Okay. The outermost level in this early version, let's say the outermost level has 24 spaces to make a complete right. circuit around. But the innermost circle, closest to the center of the maelstrom, has only 6 spaces around it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the closer you get in toward the center, the fewer spaces it takes you to move around the right. around the circle, around yep. the vortex, the board. Now, you can just stay within your current track and move around that circle, and taking either as many, you know, however many spaces you want, but it can often be more efficient to kind of dive in, to pick up speed as you dive toward the center of the maelstrom, that can allow you to zip back out again to the other side. And so it kind of becomes a game about positioning yourself. Because obviously, in naval sea battles of that time, the only way to attack each other is to come up broadside against them, you know, right. and shoot your cannons out the side of your ship. You can't shoot forward, can't shoot back. You shoot broadside. Okay. Right. So it's about positioning yourself to come up upon your enemies at the right time when you have a chance to fire on them, and then get away before they have a chance to fire back at you. But oftentimes it just kind of means pull up next to each other and just unload.
Right.
You know, the original idea was movement and attack, you know, movement and attack,
mm-hmm.
and then escape. Okay. Positioning and just beat downs. But of course, you know, then also the thing about the maelstrom is the water is all moving in toward the center. So I wanted there to be a way for people for the game to kind of force you toward the middle, you know, and so the next idea is that, of course, that there's a turn counter. And as the turn counter counts up, as you move farther into the game, eventually the outermost rows or rings of the board become unavailable, because on turn 2, the outermost ring, you can't sail in that anymore because the water's pushing you all in. Right. On turn 4, the next ring is not available, and so on and so forth. You know, so eventually you get pushed in toward the center, and if ever you find yourself where you fall into the center single space of the board, that means you've fallen into the pit depths and you're destroyed anyway.
Right.
Okay. So you got to keep out of the center. You got to kill all the other guys. And that's about as far as I took it, as far as I got that first night, basically lying there right. in bed, long after Pirates had ended and my brain just had kept on going, you know?
Right.
And then that's what I brought to you the next day. Was that basic form of maelstrom.
Yep.
Okay. We talked about this at work the other day on sure. our lunch break.
Sure did.
And you helped me take it from there. So what that evolved into, and I already prototyped this, and if you follow me on Twitter, you probably already saw some pictures of it.
Right.
Okay. What this has turned into now is a worker placement game.
Right.
Worker placement strategic combat game.
Yeah.
Okay. So every player...
So many of those out there.
Yeah, right. Every player now has a little kind of... It may be a tableau, but it'll probably end up would be printed on the board itself.
It's one big board with the vortex in the center and then right. your ships on the four
ship
sides.
Tableaus on the four sides.
Four corners, maybe.
Four corners, maybe. Right, something like that. Okay. And there are a few, there are different actions that you can take. Okay. You can sail your ship. Now the water's always moving, all right? Mm-hmm. And you always have to move a minimum of three spaces
right.
in a clockwise direction around the board. Okay.
Yep.
Now, if you don't choose to sail on that turn, you're still going to move forward, but you're going to move two spaces forward and one space inward.
Right.
Okay, because the water's pushing you in.
Right, and you're not steering against
you're
it.
Not steering, right. You're focused on other things. But if you have, for every worker you have in your sailing section, that's one extra space that you can move, and you can choose whether to move in or out. You know, you can change right. directions. Right.
Now, you do have to always be going in the same way around, right. like a bicycle wheel, basically. You're always
exactly.
going the same way.
You can't turn around and go the other way, because right. the wind is so strong, it's forcing you to move in that clockwise direction.
Right.
Okay, so you can sail. Your second option is to fire the cannons, okay? And for every worker in the fire the cannons section, that's one time you fire the cannons. Now, there's no dice rolling for damage. You fire the cannon once, you do one damage to the opponent you're firing at. Mm-hmm. And there's a range, you know, they have to be within three spaces of range of you,
yep.
okay? If you put three workers in the fire section, then you get to fire three times, you get to do three damage to that person on that turn.
Yep.
Okay.
And it's automatic.
Automatic, yep. right. Fire the cannons. Now, you can also raid another ship. You can have guys swing across in ropes and raid the other ship. If you are adjacent to another ship, you can raid that ship. If you raid the ship, you don't damage the ship, but you can kill a crew member. Every time that you do that, you can kill one of their crew members, one of their workers.
Right.
Now, you might also, though, want to defend the ship. For every guy that you have in there defending, you can resist one damage or resist one crew member killed. All right. And then the last option is to repair the ship. Okay. For every two workers you have in repair, then you can repair one damage or get one crew member back.
And how many hit points?
Right now, I'm thinking 9 hit points per ship.
Okay. So that'd be 3 full-on shots.
Exactly.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Right.
Three. I was when we first tried it, we tried it with 5 and it was basically the first player won. The
no
first player
what.
To engage
right.
always won.
Right.
Then we tried 10 and that was not the case. Mm-hmm. So 9, okay, cool.
Right. And my original idea was that you would have one action per turn and you can either sail or you can fire or you know, real simple stuff. And then that evolved into 2 actions per turn and you can do any of these things you want, but you gotta have workers there. But the current concept, the current way I've got it set up is that you know, you're only going to start the game with 3 workers available to you, period.
Mm-hmm.
Max of 4.
Right.
Okay. If you can recruit an extra guy, but you cannot recruit more than 4 people. So the most you can do is 4 actions per turn based on how you have those guys applied.
In the recruit thing, you put 2 guys on the brig, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they can pull a prisoner out.
Right.
So to recruit them.
Exactly. Right. That's the idea. And for repair, or for defend, you need 2 guys in order to defend against 1.
Right.
You know, so sometimes if you're going to put 2 guys in defend or 2 guys in to recruit, you know, that's it. You have to have 2 guys
that's
in those 66% things.
66% of your crew if you only have 1 guy.
Exactly.
If you only have 3 guys.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So that's a tough choice. So, okay. So you can do as many actions as you want based on how many workers you have going there. Okay. But the more you put in one thing, the more powerful that's going to be with the few options you have. Now, the next thing about worker placement, of course, is if the same guy always goes first every time, then, you know, that kind of sucks.
Right.
So now I say we're also going to have a captain token.
Yep.
You know? And so on turn 1, I have the captain token, so I choose first, and then the next guy, like Stone Age, they have
right.
the chieftain thing. And so we each take turns assigning a worker to our tableau because we get to see what everybody else does, you know?
Right.
And the next turn, the captain token moves to the next player, and then they go first. And it's kind of right. a round robin idea.
And now that player goes first, like the player who goes first also acts first, right?
Also acts
so
first.
So the penalty for them is they have to place first, so everybody can react to them placing-wise.
Right.
But they also act first, which means they can get out of there.
Zoom up and try and attack you or get away.
Or try and run away.
Right. Exactly.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, and that's well balanced because one of the other things, when it was just every other, like, I go, now you go. Now I go, now you go.
Yeah.
It really became tough, mm-hmm. you know, you had to make a lot of hard decisions.
You did. Yeah.
That were not good decisions.
Right. And I don't like games that play that take too long to play, but in its earliest incarnation, this game went way too fast. way too fast.
Way too fast, yeah. I mean, you and I literally played for about 6 minutes.
Right, and I think I won because I went first.
Yeah. In the second game, I think we played for about 10 or 12 minutes.
And then you 10 won.
10 hit points, yeah.
Right, and you won because you went first.
Right.
Yeah. So that's kind of the current status of the game.
But even, let me just say that even sure. in that really rugged shape it was in the first day, not the first day you brought it to me and said, here's this idea I have, and we talked about it. The first day you said, here's a prototype, let's go to lunch and play it.
Mm-hmm.
As rugged as it was, like, there was a game there. It was mm-hmm. immediately understandable. There's a good game mm-hmm. somewhere in here that mm-hmm. you just need to find because it wants to come out and play.
Yeah. So if you kind of think about it, it's kind of like the worker placement concepts that are familiar from Stone Age with the type of movement, the way the track is structured in Formula D with kind of a brick pattern of spaces that you move through.
Except for 1,000 times better than Formula D.
Condensed, a smaller package, you know. But yeah. but the way cars move in a Formula D, right. you can't zigzag.
Right.
You're not going to be zigzagging a ship around the maelstrom.
And the cool thing is, in your game, there's no reason why you would. It would yeah. not be helpful to you to do that.
No.
I'm excited to see the next, because you haven't. Yeah. I haven't got to play this newest version yet.
No. And in fact, I haven't even prototyped the revision yet. It's just these next revisions are in my head, and I just haven't had the time to put it together yet. But it's going really well. I mean, this game has just went from concept to prototype super super fast, like a total of about 3 hours,
right.
to take it from of our converse total. But the original idea, our conversation about the idea to playable prototype was a total of about 3 hours of work.
Yep.
I only spent actually maybe an hour and 10 minutes on the computer putting the stuff together.
Right. And the prototype is super simple, but
super basic.
Use gameicons.net though.
For I did. Yeah. Sweet icons. Gameicons.net is an excellent site.
Check it out.
Yeah. But it was really, really, exciting. It was cool to see that come together so quickly and see it work. And I'm thrilled about it. I'm really, really thrilled. It's a game. It's an idea that totally came out of nowhere for me.
Right.
Just lying there, and all of a sudden, aha! Let's make this happen. Let's see if this works.
Right.
And it's rare that rarely happens to me.
Yeah. No, so you are usually the more thoughtful one when it comes to that.
Yeah.
I'm usually the one that's like, I'm going to make a prototype.
Yeah.
Because they're not always playable though right away. Yeah. So it was cool to see. Like I said, it was obviously very rough at first, mm-hmm. but there was still a game that was awesome. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I definitely want to take this somewhere. I think once I get it to a firmed up thing, I think I need. This is another thing that I have decided I want to do since Gen Con. After talking to more and more people, I want to get more print and plays out there. I want to make them more available for people. I need to start getting them on BGG. I mean, we can still host them on the website, of course, but I need to get posting on BGG about that stuff. And, you know, this would be a really easy game for me to just put on GameCrafter, you know,
mm-hmm. and
not worry about selling, publishing, just get it on there, get it available so people can try it. People can play it if they want to, you know, either print and play for free or get something a little higher quality from GameCrafter. I really want to try and do that.
And you can do both. I mean, that way, if somebody Absolutely. Would rather have a physical copy they don't have to make,
Absolutely.
They can order it. And some people will do that.
There's no reason not to.
They'd rather do that. Yeah. So
right now it's called Maelstrom. I think actually there's a Fantasy Flight game out there called Maelstrom from about 2001. So about 12 years ago. It's a completely different kind of game, but I don't really want to ape that name so much. So we'll see what happens with the name. But yeah, Maelstrom, that's the idea. I'm really happy with the progress that I've made just in such a short time. And I'm hoping that it comes together. And it's also been nice to have a break from Rocket Wreckers, to be totally honest.
I'm sure.
You know, because I was so heavy on that game for several months.
Oh, yeah.
And it's been nice to have a break, a little reprieve. So I'm happy about that. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So that's the game.
Cool. All right. Yeah. No, that's I'm excited mm-hmm. to try the next incarnation of it.
Now, I had one idea. Tell me what you think about this. So, Kanzumi Goddess. We still haven't played it. We haven't had a chance yet. You and I want to play it together. You know, I mean, I might play with Christine to learn the rules, but for our official review about Kanzumi Goddess, I want you and I to play it so we can discuss it together.
Sure.
Okay. But here's a proposition. Okay. Because I said, I want to have a contest to give it away after we play it, to give it away to a listener. We don't have a good name for fans of the show.
Oh, you're right.
You know, like fans of like, Star Trek are Trekkers.
Or Justin Bieber fans are Beliebers.
Beliebers, you know. Fans of the X-Files are X-Files, P-H-I-L-S, okay? And our good friends Flip the Table, their fans are called Flipsters.
Yeah. Hey, we need something.
We need something for that. So, listeners, what do you got? We want you to submit. I want you, if you agree,
yeah,
Jason.
Yeah, okay? Let's do it.
If we want to know what to call our fans, okay? Yep. Tell us what you think we should call you or what you would like to call yourselves, okay?
Yeah.
A name, a label for fans of Building the Game, a documentary podcast.
I love it.
And we will pick, we will go through all the entries and we will pick our favorite.
Yep.
Okay? And whichever one is our favorite will win our copy of Kanzumi Goddess. I know it's kind of a crappy surprise, or a crappy win.
Right.
But maybe not. Maybe it's a great game. Maybe you're really into anime chicks. Maybe right. This is exactly what you
if
want.
If you're really into anime chicks, you best come up with a good name because this is your game.
Yeah. So, Kanzumi Goddess, it's yours. So tell us what you think we should call fans of Building the Game. We need some kind of a catchy one word or maybe two word kind of thing that we can say.
Yeah. And it needs to be awesome.
And it needs to be great.
I can't believe you thought of this. This is such a good idea.
Yeah, this occurred to me. And I thought, oh, man, because it's been bothering me that I don't know what to call our fans.
Right.
So that is the contest that I have just announced off the cuff. Surprise. I don't know when we're going to be able to get together to play the game. Hopefully soon. We can give it a try. And we'll report back to you as soon as possible.
Yeah, we can always honestly probably do a handheld recording on a lunch.
Sure, something, so, you know.
Hopefully the gameplay's fast.
Right. No firm deadline on this contest yet. After we play Kanzumi Goddess and we talk about it on the show, at that point, then we will give you guys a firm final deadline for that contest.
Right.
But you can go ahead and start sending in your entries right now. Let us know what you think. What should we call? It's, let's see, the BTG fan name contest featuring Kanzumi Goddess.
All right.
So there you go. Okay.
Sweet. We don't have any comments this
week.
Nope,
right? So. We're all out of comments, so we'll just go ahead and wrap it up. Thank you guys so much for listening to the show. We really, really appreciate it. Man, another long episode. That's great. It's not great because it's freaking hot in this studio
I'm going to have a heat stroke.
It's great for you guys. Thank you so much for listening. If you want to get in touch with us or if you want to enter the contest, you can send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @podcastBTG. Jason is @JASlingerland, and I'm @poorly_design. You can also take a look at the BTG Co-op, btgco-op.com. It's our new exciting website where we are going to be featuring more and more information about game design, articles and stories from other designers, publishers, whoever we can talk to. We have some really, really exciting people lined up for some good stuff in the future. Hopefully we'll be able to announce that soon. Keep a weather eye on the horizon there. You can also like us on Facebook. Reminder, we hit our 100 likes goal, and so there is a print and play copy of Potent Potions out there for you guys. Take a look at it. It's a great game that Jason made a while ago. He hasn't really done a whole lot with. It's ready for you guys to try. Tell us what you think. I really love it. Also, a reminder that there is a print and play of Rocket Wreckers out there if you want to give that a try. I'd love any feedback that you guys have. You can give us a 5-star review on iTunes. I meant to say, if you get us to 200 likes on Facebook, then I'll get another print and play of something out there. I don't know what. We'll see what happens. Give us our 5-star reviews on iTunes and come on back. Have I forgotten anything?
I think you covered it all.
All right. Fantastic. So thanks again. And we love you guys. We love you so much. So, so much. Oh, so much.
So, so, so much.
Good night.
Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
If they're going to kill off any characters in the new Avengers, it should be Nick Fury. Because he's not, I mean, come on.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of with you on that. I mean, Nick Fury, he's an important character in the comic books, but I don't know, he's just kind of... I'm not as excited about Nick Fury as I am about any of the other characters. I care about him a lot less.
I care about him more than Hawkeye.
Well, okay, that's a good point. I think Hawkeye should die, and then Black Widow should die, and then...
I had to choose Nick Fury or Black Widow. I would keep Black Widow around just because...
Because of her butt?
For reasons.